This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stacio. Tashni DeBroy has served as the president of Shaw University in Raleigh for 2 years, but she didn't always plan to build a career in higher education. In fact, Tashni has a PhD in chemistry and used to work for one of the biggest chemical companies in the world. But back in 2011, Shaw came knocking on her door. So she came to the university, first as a professor, and then she quickly rose in the administration. As president, Tashni has helped bolster the South's oldest HBCU. She's been credited with increasing the school's enrollment and closing a major fundraising gap. Earlier this month, Tashni was recognized for her work and awarded the Female President of the Year at the 2017 Historically Black Colleges and Universities Awards. Now Tashni is stepping away from Shaw. This fall, she'll start her work at Howard University in Washington, D.C. as Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer. But before she goes, Tashni joins us in studio. Tashni, welcome to The State of Things.
Thank you, Anita. Great to be here.
Good to have you. So tell us more about why you've chosen to dedicate so much of your own personal schooling and career to an HBCU.
You know, Shaw is my alma mater. That's no secret. And I wanted to give back to my alma mater in a much more substantive way than merely monetary donations. And so when the opportunity came about for me to be an adjunct professor at the university, I grasped the opportunity. That adjunct professorship quickly turned into an associate professorship because they needed someone full time. And so I took the position knowing that I could help to mold the next generation of diverse scientists.
And why an HBCU in particular?
Well, HBCUs need the talent. So often when graduates are successful, they go on to predominantly white institutions where they have, you know, a plethora of resources. And I realized that, you know, my passion for education is so deep-rooted that I wanted to go back to an institution that I knew may not be that well-resourced, but I could attend and participate and help to raise money. And I knew that I could do that through grant writing. I knew that I could do that through corporate sponsorships. Even as a professor, that was a type of mindset that I had entering Shaw University.
So you were at BASF, you had a PhD in chemistry. How do you transition from the world of chemistry to the world of university administration?
Very slowly. I was able to parlay in entrepreneurship prior to entering Shaw University. So after leaving BASF, I did so to pursue a passion in hair care. And along with a business partner of mine, I started a robust hair care company and a beauty salon. And then went on to Shaw University when I had much more time available to invest in young people. So entering academia, certainly the changes were very distinctive, and I fully recognized there was a major difference between corporate culture and the academic culture. You know, in some cases, the bureaucracy was heavy. And I also realized that there was a disconnect between corporate and academia. And so I wanted to bridge that gap. Even as a professor, I was reaching out to corporate entities to engage them in coming to the university to speak to our students and in engaging our students to travel the corporate world and tour their facilities, because I knew that they had to understand what type of skill sets they would need in order to be successful in the workforce. So it wasn't strange for me to form those types of partnerships and have corporate leaders entering the chemistry classroom to speak to our students.
So you've had a number of notable accomplishments. One is obviously making that connection between business professionals and the school, but also you've helped increase university enrollment, which has been a challenge for Shaw in the recent past.
That's right. When I took the job as president of Shaw University, I can tell you I had no clue whether or not we'd be able to increase the enrollment. But I saw a problem, and that was for 6 years, the university had experienced a 9% decline in enrollment. And I also realized that I had to take a business approach. I had to figure out why is it that our enrollment was declining and what we could do to stop that gap. So one of the very first things that I did was I hired a chief enrollment management officer, created a position at the cabinet level that did not exist at Shaw before. And that kind of gives the organization an idea of the focus and the priority that was being placed on enrollment. Secondly, I went out with our recruiters to a few admissions fairs and college fairs, and I noticed that other competitors were using technology to drive the admissions process, and we were still using paper applications. So we were able to switch the manner in which we approached admissions. And, you know, I realized that students didn't even want to hear the spiel that we were telling them. So I said, hey, maybe it's better for us to target this type of millennial / Gen Z audience by engaging them electronically. And so it is that we were able to partner with a company that helped us to develop a marketing tool, a very responsive marketing tool that allows us to engage parents, counselors, students, potential students rather, and every time they click on something and speak of their interests, we're able to send them material about athletics or about the STEM courses that we have. Any type of interest they have, Shaw University is in tune with those interests, and that certainly helped to ramp up the applications. At our peak, we had about 6,700 applications, meaning in 152 years, we had 6,700 applications or so. And that inaugural year, we had over 10,000 applications at Shaw.
So Shaw has obviously changed a lot in that more than 150-year time span. How would you describe a profile of a millennial Gen Z student at Shaw now? Who wants to come to Shaw?
You know, I like to call Shaw the 152-year-old startup. And the reason is that's the type of mindset that we wanted to create for the organization. We wanted to decrease the bureaucracy. We wanted corporate partners to know that they could enter Shaw University and we would be amenable to enhancing our curriculum to fit the type of entrant into the workforce that they needed. And so it is that our students are also adopting that type of mindset. Now, this audience, they recognize what the competition is, but largely they choose Shaw University not only for its history, but for its location. We have to let everybody know we're Shaw University. We were located in the heart of downtown Raleigh. And those types of ways that we approach, you know, our value proposition, it is very attractive to the millennial student. Now our students are, they're go-getters, and they come into the university knowing exactly what paths and careers they may want to pursue. And then we help to refine that by showing them that there is a world of opportunity outside of the realm that they've probably already been exposed to, careers that may not have yet been created. So we're able to mold and shape them to align better with the opportunities that are available, especially in the surrounding area. One of our goals is to certainly keep the talent in this area so that we can add value to the workforce.
And how do you make sure these students graduate? Because I know historically students that have attended HBCUs may be coming from communities with a distinct set of challenges, maybe first generation college students, maybe more students on scholarship, which means they are facing distinct challenges completing a university.
Most definitely. I think the first thing is this: we have to be in tune with our students' needs. You know, first generation college students and Pell eligible students, it's a very delicate population of students to target. And, you know, when we talk about serving our students and ensuring that their quality of life, not only academically, but socially as well, is enhanced by the Shaw University experience, we stay true to that. We call ourselves a family because we actually are. And it's not uncommon to find professors that will be so vested in a student's life that outside of the classroom, they know what's happening in their homes and they understand, you know, why they may be having academic challenges. Some problems we can fix and others we can't. We've certainly had a focus on retention of our students and on increasing graduation rates. But I will tell you that it still is a challenge for us. And one of the reasons being the major reason that students leave the university is because of finances. You know, and, you know, one talks about the cost of education, but it's not always merely the cost, you know, because we're discounting the rate of tuition. But at the same time, students are having to hold first, number one jobs and number two jobs. So hold down two jobs in order to support families back home. And so that in itself becomes a challenge because it leaves very little study time. So you often see that finances may be the root of a student's ills, but then, you know, it causes ramifications in their academic performance. And so we have done our best to, if a student has to take a stop out year, we've done our best to assist them with re-enrolling when the time is right for them. And we're not just trying to push students through without being in tune with what they have going on in their family environments. So the type of you know, criticism that one would have for a student that chooses to stop out, you know, we have to really refocus how it is that we think about those types of situations, because these are real people coming in with real family situations. And then on the other hand, you know, we do our best, our utmost best, to encourage students who are committed to completing Shaw within 4 years. And we ensure that they have the right types of resources in order to be able to do so. So it's really, I guess, customizing education and even the language that is used. I remember when I was in school, a student who dropped out of college, you know, it would be called a college dropout, right? Mm-hmm. But now the terminology that we're using is a stop out, because there's no reason why one cannot, you know, gather their bearings and come right back into the college setting. And that's the type of university that Shaw wants to ensure that we are. We're responsive to the needs of students, and we're student-centered. And so at some point in time, we're going to have to teach external stakeholders and teach the government that, you know, the college experience is morphing. And we have to realize that, you know, we need to cater to families and to non-traditional students, especially because we're seeing, you know, college and higher education evolve.
So speaking of that, you're obviously balancing a number of tensions and groups with different priorities in a role like yours. You've called yourself a millennial leader, which comes with a distinct set of stereotypes, some may say myths. What is it like to lead this kind of institution as a millennial leader, and what are the distinct challenges of balancing those tensions?
It's much like being schizophrenic. No, I often walk into rooms and let everyone know I fully recognize that this is a multi-generational audience. And, you know, sometimes I ask for forgiveness ahead of time because I'm about to get into some millennial speak, right? It's very off-putting for traditional generations when they hear a college president saying slay and, you know, catch me outside. How about that? They're like, what is going on right here, right? But, you know, I have not departed from my target audience. I know that I do well with a student population, and I see the results. I see the affinity that our students have developed for Shaw University, and the type of Shaw U pride that is even stronger than in most recent years within the faculty, within our staff. And whatever I saw that worked, I stuck to it. And, you know, everybody wants a genuine leader. And so I always say that I can only be Tashni, right? I can't pretend to be someone who I'm not, and this is a space that I'm comfortable in. So I have, you know, stayed true to doing so. And when it calls for a businesswoman, I know that I'm capable of doing that as well. But most importantly, I think, you know, one of the things that I try to do is inspire people. So regardless of age, I've been able to inspire people who are older than I am and young people, people my age. And that's when I consider that the job is well done, because you think about all of the people within the organization and just the type of energy that it requires for the team to be successful. I can't do it on my own, you know, so I just have to make sure that I'm in tune with each of these stakeholders. And so far it worked.
And you've done an excellent job with fundraising, and it's been noticeable closing the fundraising gap that you've done at Shaw. But you are also departing, and there has been a lot of high turnover at the top of Shaw. I think 6 presidents since 2002, a lot of turnover. So how are you grappling with knowing about this high turnover rate and having been successful, but also choosing to leave?
you know, it's one of the toughest things that anyone has to do in their career. There's never a right time. And the way that the university is currently set up, the momentum is going. And we have a team. I did not help to transform Shaw University on my own. You know, it's really a solid team that's on the ground. And yes, I recognize that when the leader departs, there may be disruption in the morale or in the system. But the interim president, Paulette Dillard, is currently my VP for academic affairs, and she is phenomenal. We always joke that every time I've gotten a promotion, she's gotten a promotion. Because when I started as department chair, I hired her into the biology department. And then as I progressed to special assistant to the president, she went on to be department chair, then dean. And when I became president, she became my VP for academic affairs. And now for the ultimate promotion is that she'll be the interim president. And so there's a sense of camaraderie that already exists, especially within her realm. She operates the largest portion of the institution, which is academic affairs, and the continuity will persist as well. You know, the tagline, epic, she's already said, I'm not changing that. We're going to commit to being epic. You know, it works. Let's continue doing it. And so that makes me very proud, because I know that the university is in good hands. And what I want for Raleigh to do is continue to wrap Shaw University in its strategy and continue to embrace the university, because, you know, it's an integral part of Raleigh's history and Raleigh's future. So regardless of whether Tashni is there or not, that is what my message to our stakeholders will be. Shaw University still needs you, and we're going to ask them to continue to support our university.
So you're transitioning to Howard at a unique time in our nation's culture and political dialogue. And I know there's been interesting tension between the Trump administration and HBCUs. A group of leaders went to meet with him in February. Some were concerned about how those conversations went. Betsy DeVos was not well received as a commencement speaker on an HBCU campus. Yet HBCUs rely heavily on the federal government for funding. Mm-hmm. So how do you serve in an administrative role at this time when you're balancing the tensions of what your students want and what they may be saying and what you need as an institution working with an administration?
There's a delicate dance to play between the needs of internal stakeholders and those of our external stakeholders. I look forward to serving with President Frederick as a key member of his cabinet. I look forward to doing some of the very same things that I've done both in the corporate and academic spaces, and that is, I understand executive leadership. I want to be able to create models of executive leadership with him, and where there are spots at Howard that need to be optimized and processes that need to be optimized so that we can be a better university, that is what I'll be able to do. So the same type of talent that I exhibit now in the settings I've parlayed is the same type of talent I'll bring to Howard. You know, so much of what is done in terms of gaining federal support comes from relationships. And I know that so far I've been great with relationship building. And it's the same type of spirit that I'll take to go and build relationships in Washington. I fully recognize that it's a stretch opportunity for me because, you know, instead of talking to Senator Burr and Tillis and with, you know, Congressman Price, Butterfield, Alma Adams, now I'll have the entire Senate body to build these relationships with, right? Because Howard does get quite a significant portion of its budget from the federal government. But again, I won't have to do it alone. You know, there's a team at Howard that already exists, and you don't call Howard the Mecca for absolutely no reason. You know, it's called the Mecca because it has been historically strong. And so when I made the decision to move to Howard University, I'm doing so because I would like to ensure that Howard is a model for HBCUs nationwide. I'm going to Washington with the same type of passion that I have for higher education. And I won't forget that I have the opportunity to lend a voice to small private institutions, in particular small private HBCUs, one of which is Shaw University.
Wonderful. Well, it has been great to have you. We wish you the best of luck in D.C. This is Tashni DeBroy. She served as a president of Shaw University in Raleigh for the past few years, is now moving on to Howard University in D.C. to work as Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Anita.
You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.